This is an unusual way to give a senior speech. I am recording this speech days before you will hear it, probably miles away from you right now. We find ourselves in a historic moment where we now expect the unexpected. During most international emergencies, the average person is asked to opt in to crisis relief, be that through hosting a food drive, helping to build homes, or raising money. Today, however, we are all being asked, quite literally, to do the opposite and opt out. We must opt out of our normal lives. We cannot go to school, take public transportation, or even hug a loved one. It's quite simple. If we stay home, we help to save our city, state, and country. Finally, each one of us, just as an individual, can help end the national crisis. But for some reason, I have never felt more inconsequential. I'm sure many of you feel this way as well. All of us are doing the only thing that is being asked of us right now. But still, we want to do more. I have always hated this feeling. I love being busy. I fill my life to the brim, and I love every second of it, because everything that I do makes me, me. I float from an a cappella meeting to a Senate meeting to a basketball practice in the span of one day, because Trinity has let me create a collage of all my favorite things and call it my everyday life. I bet most of you are similar. And so this break from daily life, the great pause of 2020, as I heard it termed, can leave us lonely and directionless. So much of what fulfills us, in and out of school, seems trivial given the emergency outside the door. And so much of what gives us purpose and meaning within Trinity, the grades, the popularity, and the clubs, may, in the grand scheme of things, not even matter. As you lose touch with all of this, you can feel you are losing yourself. You are forced to ask, who are you without the stuff that makes you you? Up until sixth grade, I went to a really small Montessori school, demographically similar to Trinity. No matter the school, though, from the time we are little, we distinguish our classmates by what they do. There was the soccer kid, the dance kid, the theater kid, the funny kid. I was the black girl. It seemed to me that while my white classmates might be distinguished by their choices or their hobbies, I was distinguished by my skin. One of my earliest kindergarten memories took place around snack time, when three white classmates were planning a big sleepover. Being the annoyingly curious 5-year-old that I was, I asked if I could come too. They giggled, glanced awkwardly at each other, turned to me, and pronounced, "You can't come because we can't do your hair." At age 5, when I had no language to articulate my feelings, I knew that because my hair grew rougher, my knees got ashier, and my lips were bigger, that I was different. To this day, I shy away from taking pictures with my Trinity friends because the first thing I see is my dark skin, and I feel vulnerable and othered. The thing is, I never feel this way because of money. I have my favorite SoulCycle instructor. I Uber to school every day. I never worry whether my parents can afford college. Yet when I stand against a white background, I feel vulnerable. As Zora Neale Hurston put it, I feel colored. As I grew up, the most immediately obvious distinction between me and most of my peers was this color. The way I saw it, unlike my white classmates, I did not get to choose what made me special. That is, what made me, me. So if I was always at the mercy of other people's gaze, my only choice then was to curate the image that they saw. From the first moment I joined my class in the 7th grade, I watched as groups of girls and boys pulled their identical Trinity School quarter zips over their heads, sometimes following the dress code outlined in the middle school handbook, but always asserting another, tacitly understood one. They seemed so connected, dressing the same, spending every second together. I watched friend groups talk, joke, and vacation together with such ease. They all seemed to just be Trinity, whereas I felt a constant need to perform Trinity. And I worked at it. I worked to do well in school because I needed confirmation of my intelligence. I trained hard so I could score the most points in a basketball game because I needed confirmation of my victory. In 7th grade, I decided to run for student government because I needed confirmation of my popularity. I have always been more than involved in this school. I have devoted nearly all of my mental and physical energy to Trinity. But I've struggled to feel connected here. In all of my relationships, even with my closest friends, I've studied people and fought hard to crack the funny joke, deliver the witty personal anecdote, or choose a relevant seat in the cafeteria. It seemed impossible for me to achieve the instinctive, easeful breathing of my white affluent peers. I feared anyone seeing this labor in me. I knew that visually, I could never match. I fought with all my might to never give them a reason to color me as deficient. So I mapped out a life that I hoped would keep me safe from their eyes. I curated an Andy who could escape being colored. But in my quest to dull my color and reclaim the choices that I believe I lost in being the black kid, I started to become unseen and unknown. Let me be clear. I felt this not because of any intentional racism or exclusion. But in a monochrome environment, blending in is interchangeable with belonging. At least that's what I thought. I had trained myself so well to never be off that I could never really be open or connected, even with my closest friends. I felt the most colored at Trinity during my sophomore year. By October, my tight-knit group of 5 close friends split. My white friends began naturally to expect and receive invitations to upperclassmen parties. The rest of us, the girls of color, did not. Slowly, this division seeped from our weekends into our daily interactions in the hallways and the cafeteria. Soon, the 5 of us spent no time together at all. This confirmed to me that they were pretty and we were not. They inherently belonged, while we could only attempt to blend. The feeling that grew in the pit of my stomach as I watched my friends post themselves hanging out without me placed me back at the snack table in kindergarten, excluded from the sleepover because my hair was too rough to braid. That same year, I was the only student to serve on both the SDLC and the Student Senate. These were 2 groups that I loved being a part of. The Senate that year was dominated by white males, and SDLC membership included a broad spectrum of colors. Midway through the year, a monumental debate about which flags could hang in the swamp flared between the 2 groups and made me acutely aware of how hard it would be for me to mediate the positions of both groups without feeling as if I were betraying both and belonging to neither. In Senate, I was the face of the SDLC. In SDLC, I was the voice of the Senate. I learned quickly that to the Senate, I seemed like every other overly sensitive, politically correct, angry Black woman. In SDLC, I sounded like every bougie, sellout, two-faced puppet of the white, hegemonic patriarchy. The great flag debates soon dissipated, and no one said anything when one day, the flags just disappeared, as if nothing had happened. But for me, something had happened. Earlier in my time at Trinity, I had thought the Senate, as an elected body, represented the will of the majority of the student body. I thought then that senators were the epitome of people who belonged. But what I failed to account for and can see only now is that an elected body can, for good or for bad, reaffirm the existing and confirmed perspectives. Membership to this group, while a confirmation of blending with the popular opinion, in no way fulfilled my desire to feel authentically connected to this community. But I didn't know that then. I feared that aligning myself with the experiences and the voices of those who are too often not invited to be heard would allow people to mark me as the other, to paint me as too colored. And what does that even mean, to be too colored? Zora Neale Hurston wrote in her essay, "How It Feels to Be Colored Me." I do not always feel colored. I feel most colored when I am thrown against a sharp white background. Here at Trinity, our racial identity, otherness, coloredness, are created by the gaze of white people, predicated upon a state of being different from the majority of this community. I had always seen blackness as something that white eyes colored me with. I had never, until recently, defined my own color and claimed it as mine. This color, this blackness, does not other me. It opens me, frees me, connects me. Because I have been colored, I see the people, their stories, their power, invisible to untrained eyes. Blackness through black eyes has never been a weight, but a window to the soul and to humanity. The expansive canon of black thought proves that the mere dialogue around such a slippery abstraction, blackness, whiteness, invites insight more dynamic than consensus or any generic truth. I am not what you color me. And the very fact that I questioned, even battled with my color, proves that I and any decision about myself are confirmation of my strength and my choice. When I was little, my mom read me a book called The Colors of Us. A little girl who wants to paint portraits walks around her neighborhood, searching for dimensional descriptions of each person's complexion. Her friend Isabella is a chocolate brown, just like the cupcakes the class had on Isabella's birthday. Mr. Pellegrino, who owns a pizza parlor, is golden brown, just like the pizza crust that he makes. And Mr. Cashmere, who sells different spices in his store, is the color of ginger and chili powder. When I read this book, I had never heard so many descriptions of black and brown. As Lena sees each person, she does not decide their color for them. She sees their color as reflected by the things that they decide to do. Trinity, celebrate the integrity of your identity. What does it mean to be you? What does it mean to you to be black? To be Asian? To be LGBTQ+? To be Jewish? To be a girl? To be a boy? To be neither? Our identities demand language that is liquid, intersectional, dynamic, human. We cannot ignore that socio-political dynamics are involved in any identity. But beauty is equally powerful. To be colorblind is to render human experiences irrelevant and invisible. I am a firm believer that Trinity can try to be better than the world. Given that, our charge is to do better than to try to blend with the majority. I have my message to share with you about what my Blackness is to me. But someone else has a different story, a different color. And it will take time to train our eyes to see the map of our stories connected. But I think that we're up to the challenge.